Welcome to the Visceral Voice Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Schneider.
And I'm your co-host, Kimberly Doreen Burns.
Through this podcast, we aim to bring you the most current, up-to-date research on voice science, function, pain science, movement, and everything in between.
We also aim to bring you information and perspective from all angles of the theater industry.
I am on a quest to learn everything I can about the living, breathing body and its intricate connection to the voice. This podcast documents the continuation of my learning and my experience as a professional singer, a nutritional consultant, a movement practitioner, and a manual therapist.
And my learning as a professional performer, voice, acting, and musical theater educator.
Join us as we strive to provide current, knowledgeable, creative, and compassionate information
to help you restore, regain, and create happiness and success on your vocal journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back. In today's episode, Kimberly and I interview Dr. Jada Phillips. I did a mini episode with Dr. Phillips about a month ago. We were doing a masterclass through the Visceral Voice, which was titled Overcoming the Manifestations of Anxiety. And then we got Jada back for today's full-length episode, which was awesome. And she brings us through three different techniques, EMDR, EFT, and brain spotting, which is really cool to hear about all three of these techniques. She is a mother, a wife, a veteran, a psychologist, and an entrepreneur. She is a licensed psychologist in both New York and New Jersey and has been in the mental health field for about 14 years working in various settings. She received a Bachelor of Arts in Criminal Justice from Mount Mary College in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, joined the Air National Guard and was in the Security Force Squadron for about 8 years in the military while she was also going to school and working full time, and works her way all the way up to getting her doctorate in psychology. I just really admire her work, and I think that you will too. So without further delay, here is Kimberly and my conversation with Dr. Jada Phillips on our mental health series. Hello, Dr. Jada Phillips. Welcome back to the podcast.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So if you just want to kind of remind us, maybe not everyone checked out that episode, so just a little bit about you and about becoming a psychotherapist and about all of the different specializations that you do in psychotherapy.
I initially had no idea I wanted to be a psychologist, a therapist. It was far from my mind, nothing I ever thought of. I initially wanted to be a lawyer because people said I was really good at arguing. So, you know, obviously if you're a child that likes to argue, like, you know, you should become a lawyer. So that became what I wanted to do. And the other side is I really wanted to be a fashion designer. So I decided to go to school for a double major. So I went in for criminal justice, and fashion design. When I started in the fashion design, I found that I needed to know how to sew, because in my mind, I just wanted to draw because I like to draw. I'm an artist. The sewing part I didn't have. So they told me that would be like a whole year's worth of classes to kind of catch me up to do the clothing design. And I didn't want to do a full extra year of college. So I ended up dropping that major and just kept criminal justice. Fast forward, when I graduated, I moved to New York with plans on going to Columbia University because I thought it'd be like this great, amazing school to become a lawyer, not knowing how hard it was to actually get into the school or even take the LSAT and get a decent enough score to get into law school. So while I was trying to get that going, I ended up going to John Jay for a forensic psychology degree, a master's in forensic psychology. So I figured, ooh, same type of scenario. I'm going to be working with criminals and, you know, it'd take me into the field. Cause in my mind I was like, I'll be an FBI profile or something. So that's how I jumped into the psychology, arena. And then from there, I got a second master's in forensic mental health counseling because that specific degree came with a license, which would allow me to eventually practice and I could do like therapy with individuals, which I didn't even think about at the time, what all that meant. I just knew, oh, I got a license. I could actually do something with this license. So let's just jump into this degree. And it was, to me, it was a free degree. We got to transfer all of our first round of credits from the first degree. And all I needed, I think, was like three classes. So I did three classes and got a second master's. and then I realized once you get that master's, you needed like 3,000 hours of supervision after like post-masters. And 3,000 hours is like 2 years of steady work doing, you know, with clients. And it was just impossible. You couldn't win. Nobody wanted to hire you because you didn't have the experience, or they would hire you and it wouldn't be in that role. So I was like a supervisor role. I didn't get any type of hours. And that's when I said, you know what, I'm going right into a doctorate program, because I knew the license was coming with that. And it didn't come with it as easily as I thought. But that's how I jumped into the PhD program. And then I ended up graduating with a PhD in psychology, clinical psychology. So that's how I jumped into that field. And I just go with the flow with things, how things just feel, where it's at. Does it flow with me? Is this what I'm liking? And it's part of the journey. I just kind of go with where, I don't know, the messages are sending me. So that's kind of how I just followed the path in that direction. And it was great because I love where I'm at right now.
I just have to say, what an extremely intelligent, strong, smart woman you are. I mean, that resume and that level of experience and expertise and the varied interests. My goodness, what a gifted brain you have. I'm so impressed.
Ah, thank you. I don't look at it that way, but thank you.
Yeah, and that's not even it, because then you also served for 8 years, right?
Yes. Oh, I always forget that part because it's all like tied together. But yeah, in the middle of all of that, I joined the military. Initially the Army National Guard. And then I ended up switching to the Air National Guard because when I came in, I wanted to be a cop in the Army and they didn't have that position. They put me doing paperwork. So people are deploying. I was doing their paperwork for deployment and I was like, this is boring. I didn't like it. And somebody told me, you know, if you want to go become an officer, because I figured this is in the line of what I want to do, go to the Air Force, they have it. So I eventually literally, I think, signed my contract weeks before I was supposed to go to basic and went to the Air National Guard and joined as security forces, which is the is police for the Air Force. So I did that for 8 years in National Guard. So it was weekend. They call it weekend warriors, but it was weekend stuff, which worked for me because I had a full-time job. I had, you know, school, and I just knew I didn't want to mess up what I had going at the time. So it was a nice venture.
So Jada, with your psychology degrees now, with all of your continuing education and everything, talk to us a little bit about some of the additional training and specializations that you work with and do in your practice.
During the pandemic, I decided to like spend the time getting more specialized in what I wanted to focus on. So that was trauma and PTSD. And that had to do with, because of the pandemic, all these doctors and first responders, they were dealing with a lot of trauma. You know, people's lives are in your hands. And I'll never forget, it was a specific story about a doctor in New York. She ended up committing suicide because of all the losses that she dealt with in the hospital. And they said, you know, she never had a mental health history before. It was just out of nowhere that this happened, but it was just too much. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, I gotta get out there and I gotta do something. I gotta help these individuals because it's crazy. So that's how I ended up starting opening up the private practice. And I wanted to get more into the trauma. So I took EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's the number one go-to treatment for PTSD in the military, the VA's number one go-to treatment. I also did EFT, which is emotional freedom techniques. And that's part of energy psychology, and it's tapping. And EMDR has tapping component as well. So they're kind of similar and different, but similar. And then the other recent one that I did was brain spotting, which is a little bit more free flowing type of technique. And it dips into the mid, deep into your brain, the midbrain where trauma tends to reside. And it helps the person kind of process and kind of get that trauma going and moving. So it moves to another part of your brain where it gets stored and put away and it no longer like affects you sensory wise, because when you have trauma, it's more in the body that you're feeling it. I mean, you have like the memory and the thoughts, but it's a feeling that you have in your body. So sometimes people don't even remember the trauma. They just know there's something going on with them. So I have those three are like my main ones right now that I kind of focus on. But you have your, like, your standard CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy. But I don't like to be, I'm not a cookie cutter therapist. I like to just meet the person and kind of see where they're at and what I think is going to go in the moment. It really is in the moment. When we're meeting, I'm like, all right, let's go with this where we are right now. Let's do it. And they're like, all right. So as long as they're down for it, we're going with it.
Are you able to give us a sampling of one of your techniques?
But like with the EMDR, if you're in person, you could use like just like a tool or your pencil. But the idea is eye movement. So you're moving your eyes left to right. So when someone's in front of you, you can move the pen in or object you have in your hand in front of the person, and their eyes are just going to follow it. I also have a light bar as well. And so the light will go across the screen so the person's eyes can move. And the idea is you're going left to right, so you have this bilateral movement in your brain. You're using the right and left brain. Because as you guys know, the right side of your body connects to the left side of the brain and the left to your right. So you want this bilateral movement to get the processing going. But when you're virtual, it's kind of hard to do a pen with somebody because sometimes you get like the trail when you're moving it. So you're able to do tapping, which you can do in person as well. Like they like to call it the Wakanda tap. You can cross your arms like the hug, and you could tap like this.
Yeah. For our listeners, hug yourself, cross your arms in front of you and put one hand on each of your shoulders. That's what Jade is doing right now.
So yeah, you have this way of tapping the bilateral right and left. And while you're doing this, you're going to be processing a specific memory. So let's say, for example, and it could be something small. Let's say when you were 15 or 13, you're in school and somebody, you tripped and fell and the kids laughed at you. So now you have like this conscious thing when you're out in public, like maybe you're going to fall and people are going to laugh at you. So we can bring up that memory and I'll ask you, you know, where are you feeling this in the body? You're thinking about this time that you fell. Where are you feeling it in your body? And you could, you know, I'm feeling it in my chest. It's tight. I feel anxious. It's in my stomach. I feel queasy. People are laughing. Okay. So you feel that on a scale of 0 to 10, how much distress do you feel from that? 0, completely neutral. You don't feel anything. 10, just very distressing. Where are you feeling that? And somebody might say, you know, oh, it feels like a 6. It's kind of up there. It's kind of high. I'm like, all right, so let's do that. Get that memory in your mind. What's going on? Have that feeling in your body, that stomach feeling, that tightness in your chest. And when you have that together, I want you to start tapping. So the person will just start tapping. One hand at a time, right, left. And you can go as fast or as slow as you want, whatever's comfortable. And they'll do this, I'd say about like 30, 40 taps. I'll be counting. And I'll tell them to stop and take a deep breath. And then I'll ask them what they're noticing, what kind of comes up for them. So wherever their processing is, like, you know, the mind's going to go wherever it wants to go. So maybe they're thinking, oh, that fall wasn't so bad. I was a kid. Kids are going to laugh. If I saw somebody fall, I probably would have laughed as well. So they're processing how they're feeling about it now as an adult. And I'm going to ask to check, like, where are you noticing your body? Oh, the tightness kind of went away. It's just a little bit in my stomach, but not so much. All right. So let's do that. Hold on to a little bit in your stomach that you're feeling. Keep that thought in your mind. You know, these are kids. They're going to laugh. If somebody would have fell, I might have laughed as well. And when you have that, let's tap again. So then we'll do another round of the tapping. And they'll do about 30 to 40 of the taps. And then I'll let them know, stop and take another deep breath. And then I'll ask again, what are you noticing? So the idea is as they're tapping, their mind is opening up this processing, relaxed, calm, to get the memory kind of moving. And then eventually we'll check a little bit later, because what I'll notice is maybe they're distressed or they're stressed out or anxious in the beginning. But once we do the rounds and keep going through, by the end, you usually see like a smile. Their whole face changes. And it almost looks like something lifts and they're just like, I feel really good right now. Okay, so let's tap that in. And with that, they'll say like, oh, I feel calm or relaxed. And that just lets me know that things have been moving and they're working. So for me, it's all visual. I'm just watching the changes and what they're reporting. And there's a part I actually forgot. In the beginning of all that, I'll ask them what negative cognition comes with that. So I fell in front of these people, I'm stupid, or I'm not worthy, or I, whatever it is that comes, because usually with something like that trauma, there's something, a feeling you have with that. I'm worthless. Nobody cares about me. So when you're done doing the processing, we're going to ask them, what do you want to believe about yourself? Or what do you believe about yourself? Like, I am worthy. People do love me. People do care. So once you process it at the end, we're going to start tapping in the good stuff. So do you believe that people care? Yes, I do believe. How much do you believe this? On a scale of 1 to 7, 1, you don't believe it at all. This is not true. 7, completely true. And the idea is to get them to that 7. So if they say, oh, I believe it at a 5, all right, let's tap it in. How does that feel? Feels great. Oh my God, I love this. I'm relaxed. I'm calm. I feel empowered. Okay, let's tap that in. You feel empowered. And then you just keep going to really like dig in that good feeling, dig in that thought. People do care about me. I am worthy. And the idea is we're going to tap all that good stuff in. So when the memory gets stored, you have this new narrow pathway in your mind that you have this thought like, you know, I am worthy. I am good. I feel good. And this is what it feels like to feel worthy, feel calm. I feel empowered. I feel happy, or whatever it is that they're feeling. It's easier to do if we actually have one we can work on, but it's a little process. In the beginning, it could take like 30 to 40 minutes to work through a memory, tapping through like that. And then as you work through one and go to the next one, because what you'll do is you'll chain back. Let's say right now you're feeling anxious and I don't feel like I can handle things. When else did you feel this way? And we're going to slowly work our way back. Oh, a year ago, I felt anxious and I couldn't handle this when the pandemic hit and I couldn't pay my bills. Okay. When else did you feel this way? And we're going to slowly go backwards to like the earliest memory you can remember where you felt that way. And as you work through each one from the furthest back, it gets easier and easier to work through the more recent ones, but they're all connected because the brain connects similar events together. So they all join together. And as you break through each one, it kind of breaks that up.
That is EMDR. And so now, talking about energy psychology or EFT, let's chat a little bit about that.
So with EFT is similar. You'll work through, let's say, the same memory. They like for you to start back with something at least 5 years back. So we'll say like the same memory. I fell in front of people and they started laughing. And with EFT, there's usually like an overall, they call it the table with the legs. So like there's an overall maybe feeling you have, let's say I'm not worthy. And under not worthy, what, it's was like EMDR going back, what instances did you feel not worthy, which would be the table legs. So let's say one of them was being bullied in school, or, and that'd be one of the table legs. So you work through one at a time. And with that, let's say, okay, let's work with that. And what you have the person do is bring up this memory of what happened. And you're going to ask them where they are in the same thing, sud scale, the 0 to 10, 0 neutral, 10, you feel like very distressed. Where are you at on that? Oh, I feel a 7. Where do you feel it in your body? Same thing in my chest and my stomach. And with that, you're going to tap on acupressure points in the body. So the main one they start with is the karate chop. And you have a statement that you'll open up with when you're doing it. So you'll say, even though I feel unworthy at a 7 out of 10, and I feel it in my chest and my stomach, and the person will repeat you, then you'll say, I love and accept myself. And then we'll say, even though I have this 7 out of 10, and this tightness in my chest, this feeling in my stomach, I love and accept myself. And sometimes when you're talking to a client, maybe that might not resonate for them, because if they're struggling and they don't love and accept themselves yet, you could even change it to like, I'm willing to work on loving and accepting myself. Does that work for you? And the client will let you know, yeah, I can say that. That is believable. So for them, you have to make sure you're using their language, what kind of works for them in the moment. And then from there, we'll just repeat it one more time because you want to do at least 2 rounds of that. So then you'll go to the different points on the body. So the first one that you go to, I usually go to, is the head, but some people do at the end. So you have, you'll start naming what you're feeling. This 7.
I want our listeners to know Jada's tapping on the crown of her head.
So then you start naming like what you've been feeling and where you're at. So you have like this 7, and then the person will repeat me. And then between your eyebrows, this feeling in my stomach.
She's tapping in between her eyebrows with her pointer and middle finger, both hands.
And then you go to the side of your eyes, this tightness in my chest. And then you'll go under your eyes. I don't like this feeling. And this is my favorite tap. Right above your lip, underneath your nose. This queasiness in my stomach. Underneath your bottom lip, on your chin. This 7 out of 10. And then you tap your collarbones. I don't like this feeling. And then the last point is underneath your armpit for women, where your bra strap kind of hits. This feeling in my stomach. And then sometimes you can end back on top of your head. I don't like this feeling. And then have the person stop and take a deep breath. Same thing with EMDR. And then I'll kind of ask them where they're at. And they're similar in that sense. So you go through the rounds. Obviously, they have different tapping reasons, but we'll see where they're at. And then we'll tap on that. What are you noticing now? And you kind of go through your story with that one. You're like, you know, I see that I fell. People were laughing. And as you're going through, you check the body and you're going to do tapping rounds with the statements again. And it's almost the same as EMDR, because the idea is when you get through the story, you're asking how they felt and you're just kind of like releasing this energy around that memory with energy psychology. And it's opening up the acupressure points to kind of release these energy blockages that are in your body. So like what we did in the anxiety classes, I just did a basic anxiety one, which you can Google it online and just do like tapping for anxiety, and it'll have specific things that it'll just tell you to say right away. So you don't have to think of what you want to say. If you want to tap for yourself, you just kind of read what it says and just, it'll tell you each point. All right. And you're just going to go through that. So like we did a little example in the anxiety presentation.
What's kind of an aha moment to me, as an actor and an educator in the performing arts, is these sound like very applicable techniques in an acting class.
Yeah, especially the EFT.
There's a certain method of acting, you know, called method acting, Stanislavski method, where we sort of relive experiences in our own lives and apply them to the characters that we're playing. I feel that both of these could be used in the exploration of developing character.
It has to be at least 7 years old for that method, Jada.
Oh, wow.
So the trauma can't be within the last 7 years. You want it to be more than 7 years out so that it's not going to bring up your own trauma. So you're looking further back than that.
I have a quick question about, I think it was the MDR, the first one that we did, where you were hugging yourself and tapping on your shoulders. We were tapping things in, but can you also tap things out of you?
Yeah, I like to think of the reprocessing part when you're processing the memory in the beginning. It's like you're tapping, obviously, to get the bilateral movement, but in my mind, it's you're tapping that part out. And when the good stuff comes in, that's when you start saying, let's tap that in, because you want to tap in the good feeling. But the initial beginning, when you're working through the traumatic memory, that part is like you're reprocessing. That's the reprocessing part. And you're desensitizing the memory. So the memory, maybe it makes you feel scared, anxious. It makes your chest tight. However it makes you feel, you're tapping to desensitize that feeling with the memory and tap in the good stuff so that you restore that memory with the good feeling. And part of like that, they have a technique called resourcing. So if people kind of struggle with dealing with memories, or they can't quite, you know, cope because it's too much for them. It's too intense. It's too activating. They have resourcing where you think of whatever is positive, like who could be an ideal figure for you that makes you feel safe, that's a protector. And you can imagine this person, they're strong, they're keeping me safe, they're hugging me, and you want to tap that in. So you're wanting to like look for different things, or that would be, you could tap in, that'll help the person feel more grounded. So you have another one would be a calming place. Think of a place where you can go, real or imagine, that would be just amazingly calming and relaxing for you. So like yesterday I did with a guy and he said his place was in DR, laying in this soft, cushy bed, view a night skyline in DR. The bed feels cool and he's relaxed and he sees himself laying down and just sinking into the pillow. And I'm like, how does that feel? And he's like, oh, it feels good. I'm like, all right, let's tap that in. So he tapped that in. So I said, if you're feeling a certain way, like, you know, you feel yourself getting activated, thinking about a memory, or you're just getting stressed, just in general, you're feeling frustrated, I want you to go back to that memory. So when he takes himself back, he can actually feel it. And I go through all the senses. What are you smelling? What are you feeling? The tactile, like the pillows, everything is soft. He said he smelled like essential oils. It was a calming smell for him. The visual, he saw the skyline at night. So I make sure you're tapping into everything so you fully feel it in your body.
Fontus lozenges provide moisturizing relief from dryness with a unique formula that stimulates saliva production to assist with dry mouth as well as the recovery of hoarse or strained vocal cords. Fontus offers a unique blend of green apple extract and glycerin to assist in saliva production and Manuka honey, which contains antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties to promote healing. Fontus were made with love by Caitlin Hopkins to help anyone who needs relief and is suffering from dry mouth. Please contact us at The Visceral Voice to purchase your bag of Fontus today at thevisceralvoice@gmail.com. You mentioned brain spotting, and I don't know much about that. What's brain spotting?
Brain spotting is basically unlearning anything you've ever learned in therapy. that's what they teach you. It's like you really have to unlearn, because it's a process where you're kind of just holding space for someone. So you use a teacher pointer for this technique with a client. And what it is the whole thing they say is where you look affects how you feel. So with the pointer, what they found out is when you are looking a certain way and you're feeling something, it connects to your midbrain. And that's where all, like I said, the processing is, the deep processing, the trauma resides. It's the limbic system where, you know, there is like necessarily no language. It's just where you have like all the feeling. You're in stress, or you're in fear, you're in fight or flight mode. All your prefrontal cortex, all that thinking kind of just goes out the window because you're frozen. So it's either fight, flight, or freeze. And when that happens with trauma or traumatic experiences, you're not able to think through things. So it doesn't get processed, and it kind of just loops. So it sits into that deep part of your brain. So when you're using the brain spotting with this technique, like I'll tell people, you know, this one's called outside window, the name for it. And I'll just say, like, you know, let me know if this is eye level for you, because obviously we're on camera. And when they tell me it's eye level, I'm saying, okay, I want you to bring up that memory, whatever the memory is. I fell in front of my friends in school and they all started laughing. All right, where are you feeling in your body? Same thing. On the scale 0 to 10, how are you feeling? It's a 6. It's in my chest, it's in my stomach. All right, so I want you to just think about that. Think about how it feels in your body. I want you to think about that memory and just follow the pointer. So while they're thinking and following the pointer, I go across the screen, I'm watching them. I'm looking for any type of reaction. So whether it is maybe they're blinking once and then I hit a spot and they're like rapidly blinking, or you see like a physical response, they're swallowing, or maybe like there's a movement, any type of subtle movement at all. All right, there we are. There's the access to that midbrain. And I just stop and I tell them to stare at the pointer. And basically I just tell them, I want you to notice. Let me know what you're noticing, what's going on. And you could either process out loud or you could process in your mind. You don't have to say anything. And I'm just holding space. There is no talk therapy. Oh, how are you feeling? There's nothing. I'm just attuning to you, and I'm using just messages, literally being attuned messages to you. You know, you're safe. This is a safe space for you. I want you to feel, you know, you're okay to process. And I'm just sending these messages, not out loud, in my mind. And I'm just holding the space for them while they process. And it's really interesting, because obviously if the people are processing in their mind, you don't really know what's going on. But when they're talking out loud, you see how the brain just kind of jumps around because the brain's not linear. It's not one thought just goes straight. It's interesting to see how it connects to different memories and then, you know, you're processing. So it's very deep and you might get emotional responses. Somebody may say, I want to get up. I feel like I need to stretch. And you're like, all right, just, you know, whatever the body wants, allow the body to do that. And I might check in, you know, it could be 10 minutes of complete silence while they're processing. And so I might just check in and say, I just want to kind of notice what's going on. And they could decide to tell me, you know, I'm thinking about this, and then they go silent. But it's really just about holding the space to let their brain do what it naturally does and just let them process. You don't want to interrupt it by talking. So, and it's really unlearning because it's really hard to kind of just sit and hold space in complete silence, especially if they're not processing out. And even when they are processing out loud, you want to so bad say like, it's okay, or I'm here, or, you know, how does that feel for you? But you're not, you're supposed to just let them go. So they kind of call it the, you know, in a comment, you have the front end of the comment and you're like the tail of it that follows it. As a therapist, you want to stay in the tail of it, just right behind the person as they're going. And you're just kind of like guiding them through by just holding the space. There is no, not really much communication at all. It's quite interesting, but it's really effective. You'll be surprised kind of what happens while you're doing it.
Jada, our signature questions are sort of based around our visceral voice, mind, body, vocal health, meaning, right? So we're going to ask you how often you think about your physical or your metaphoric, your personal voice during your work.
If I'm doing like presentations or if I'm, you know, if I'm around a group of people, I'm very conscious of my voice. And what I'm saying, what I'm thinking is coming through and how it's being heard, definitely. But other than that, I honestly don't think I ever thought about my voice in that sense before.
What about your metaphoric voice, your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings?
I'm careful on what my opinions are. I will share my thoughts with certain things, but I do like to sit back. I'm a person that sits back to try and see what I, or listen to whatever it is I'm listening to before I decide to jump in. I'm always conscious, definitely, of my thoughts and opinions, especially if it's going to affect someone else, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, with the physical voice, I think, well, you have a nice voice, but I think it's interesting and cool to bring up with this series in mental health, because even if you are not a performer yourself, we know that with the nervous system, intonation enters before information. And so to know that your intonation, your inflection, and the sound of your voice can also be something that can help with whoever, whatever individual you're working with. So I think it's a cool question even to ask in this series, even if the mental health practitioner is not particularly a voice professional user in the same sense that we performers are, but you are still a professional voice user.
And you know, I didn't even think about it that way. And it's funny you say that because I always have this image of this therapist with like this super calm voice. Like, yes. How does that make you feel? Just very calm. And there's certain people that have that voice. Like, it's just like, oh, your voice is amazing. And I always feel like, cause I'm just loud by nature. So if anybody says anything like, Jade, I can hear you three rooms down. Like, oh, that must be Jada. Cause I'm just a loud person. So, and I think of myself as a therapist. I don't think of myself as like the therapist that comes to mind. I'm not that person. So, and it has to do literally with the voice, just as you're saying, yeah. Just my voice alone. I'm like, hey, I'm not your kind of therapist. You're going to think I'm not that person.
Oh, but you could be, I hear you have a beautiful speaking voice. You really do.
What would be some advice that you would want to give to an aspiring young performer?
Take your time. Don't give up, you know, being just young and trying to do anything, performing, whatever thing you want to do in life. I think it's just, you're going to have a lot of hills to climb. You're going to have a lot of things to like obstacles to move around. So just kind of like give yourself some compassion and just take your time in whatever you're doing. If you're really wanting to do something, you know, it's going to happen. Just keep putting forth your effort. And what I've learned this year is the closer you kind of get to something great that you're seeking to do, the more obstacles are going to kind of pop in your way. They're going to pop up and you're just going to be like, you're going to feel like you're ready to shut down. Like, that's it. I can't do this anymore, but you got to keep pushing because the more that come in your way, it's kind of letting you know, like you're almost there. So they're just dumping on you to kind of like check to see where your faith is and if you're going to give up or not. And just know that just keep pushing past that because there is that the top of the mountain is right there, I guess you want to say. And I learned that myself. I had a lot of stuff coming through this very like last couple of months wanting to do this private practice and leaving full-time work. And stuff left and right was just coming through. And it's stuff specifically related to stuff that makes me feel anxious or makes me feel like I want to shut down. It was stuff specifically to that. It wasn't like just worldly things. It had to do with like the specific things that I'm like, oh, I just give up type mentality that are tied to that. And those things were the ones that were kind of coming in. So it could be something as small as like laundry. Growing up, like, not growing up, after I say college, you're always going to like the laundromat after college, always going to the laundromat, driving your clothes there. So we finally got our house. I was like, the first thing we bought was our washer and dryer. And I was like, oh my God, never again am I driving to a laundromat. Never again. This is like, I'm blessed. I love this. Like, I could kiss the machine. So this year, our washer broke back in February. Obviously, my job, I have 1 week left in my full-time job. And I'm like, our washer just broke. Great. And this is after like our furnace broke. So like little things were happening. And I'm like, and the washer was big because I haven't been to a laundromat since, I don't know, 2006 maybe. So I had to go to a laundromat with like the old machines where you lift up the lid and you have to like put the cycle in and 5 minutes left, you have to put it in the fabric softener, like the old school washers, which are, you know, that's how spoiled you can tell we are. But I was like, I forgot how to use a machine like that. And it was just, it really made me realize like that could have been, and it's stupid to sound like a Reiki, but it was just little things like that were happening. And that's stuff that I really appreciate. And it was like, you're not taking this from me. We're going to make this happen. I'm going to this laundromat and I'm still quitting my job. So it was just like, you know, like little things literally propping in left and right. My husband's like, what is going on? I'm like, they're trying to break us. They're not breaking us. We're going to make it. And he was just looking at me like, okay, I'm going to try your optimism. And I'm like, it's optimism, but it's just letting you know, like things are going to happen. It's life. You got to just keep moving as hard as it seems. Just got to keep moving. Yeah. It doesn't last forever.
Yeah. Jada, what is something new about the voice that you've recently learned?
It's powerful. It's moving because either, you know, sometimes the words you say or like the music you hear, it's moving. So it moves you physically, it moves you emotionally, it moves you spiritually. To me, it's just a part of like who we are. It really is just powerful. And especially with everything that's been going on in the world, and everybody has things they want to say and things that, you know, to move for movements, whether it has to do with women or race, I think the voice is just a very, very powerful thing and, you know, to use it wisely.
What are you currently learning?
How to connect with myself more. I've been on this spiritual journey to kind of just connect more with the universe. Over the past year, I've been seeing signs. Some people believe in it, some don't, but they're all over the place. So I've just been working on trying to just be really grounded and connected with, I guess, the universe, with nature, because I want to be more, you know, connected in tune with myself and what's going around. So I've been on like this spiritual path to connect with, I don't know, angels, the universe, whatever it is that's out there. I've been on this path. That's what I've been learning lately.
Fabulous. Jada, if the listeners want to get in touch with you, if that's okay, what is the best way for them to do that and to learn more about you and your practice?
Two ways. I have a phone number, but I prefer email. I just respond better if I miss a call. It's easier. Plus, anyway, when you send an email, I'm going to ask to set up a call. So to me, it's just easier to start there. So you can either go to my email, which is uyou@reserveutoday, which would be youtoday.com. So you@reserveutoday.com. Or you can go right to my website and in there you can get to my email or my phone. or just send like a chat in there and it'll just send me a message and I'll respond back. And my website is reserveyoutoday.com. Social media, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is reserved_4_you_psych. So reserve for you psych for Instagram. And it's the same for Facebook, I believe.
I love that title, Reserve You Today.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm about. It's all about you. People coming in and they're like, I'm sorry that I took your time. I'm like, no, no. Not at all. This is all your time. This is all your space. This is your money, your time. This is all about you. And a lot of people struggle with that when they work with me. They're like, I've never really been about me. I'm always for everyone. Exactly. So this is literally for you. This space is literally for you.
Jada, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us and for your mini episode. It's just been awesome hearing about you and you taking us through three different forms of techniques, which was just really, really awesome. I do want to tell the listeners that Jada is a psychotherapist who is licensed in both New York State and New Jersey. And with psychotherapy, you do have to be licensed where someone lives. So if you live in New York or New Jersey, then please feel free to reach out and reserve for you with Jada. So awesome. Jada, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, please tell your colleagues, students, and friends to subscribe, rate, and write us a review.
You can find us on Instagram or Facebook. And feel free to check out my website at www.thevisceralvoice.com for information on programs and upcoming events. I hope you join us next time for another wonderful conversation on
The Visceral Voice.